LS&C.
There's a lot of talk all over the internet these days about the remarkable benefits of carbon 60, and baby boomers are especially excited about it. Whatever generation you're in, if you want more energy, better health, and a boost in vitality, we invite you to try Gresca's Carbon 60, a stunning development in free radical destruction. Being much smaller in size than conventional antioxidants derived from fruits and vegetables, it is far more bioavailable to quickly mend the toxin-crippled cells in your body. Gresca's Carbon 60 is the only C60 product that is made without the use of undesirable solvents. The only one. Gresca's Carbon 60 was developed by a brilliant NASA carbon scientist, and 95% report positive results from this Nobel Prize-winning technology in just 4 days. Visit C-60.com. That's C-60.com, or call 7:26:60. Okay, welcome back. What a tremendously challenging weekend and day. It's going to be a hellish week as we try to continually stay on top of these breaking stories. Whether they're crazy or correct, we try to at least give you the option to make up your own mind about things. Dr. Henry Nyman is back with us this third hour tonight to take an overview, a look at the coronavirus as the numbers continue to ascend or skyrocket, however you will, as Henry has forecast for so long. Thanks for being here very much, Henry. How was your weekend? Okay?
It was busy. You know, like you say, The numbers are going up pretty dramatically. They're confirming that the fall wave has definitely begun. And, you know, there.
So we want to be clear, Henry. We want to hold on. We want to be clear about this. The fall wave has begun. Now, this is not to say the second wave. It's still a continuation of the first wave as I see it. It's just growing geometrically and exponentially because more and more people are being exposed to it. Is that correct, or are we into a second wave?
No, I would put it in a second wave because I think it's going to be quite a bit bigger than the other two. The first two waves were really part of this Herald wave. And the reason there were two waves is it is very regional. So the first wave that was in the spring was a limited number of major cities. It kind of started in New York and kind of spread to New Jersey and Connecticut, and then eventually to Massachusetts. So you had this one big outbreak in the Northeast, and then it hit key cities like Chicago and Detroit and New Orleans. And that's where most of the activity was. There really wasn't that much activity in the rest of the country. So that kind of gave the first wave, but it was fairly regional. And then that was followed by the second wave over the summer, which mostly hit the southern states. So, you know, there's a lot of activity in Florida and Texas and California were the three states, and Arizona initially were the states that had most of the activity. And the other states, it was pretty much under control. I mean, there really wasn't much activity in the Northeast for the summer. And had these other states had kind of faded, although they did start to come back. I mean, New Orleans started to come back because it was in the South. And that created the second wave, and that wave was actually a little bit bigger than the first wave because it kind of covered a larger geographic area. And now it's starting really everywhere, and it's highest on a per capita basis in the areas that didn't really get hit in the first two. So there's a lot of activity in the Midwest and the sparsely populated states like North and South Dakota, in Montana, in Idaho, in Utah. So it's states that really weren't that hit that hard in the first two. But unfortunately, it's not limited to those. Those have the highest frequency. They started a little bit earlier. So those are the ones whose ICUs are being overrun now because they don't really have the type of surge capacity that the bigger cities had. They don't have teaching hospitals that have, a lot of interns and residents and medical students. So they're limited in how many severe cases they can take, and so they're being overrun. They're triaging in some places. They're saying that that they'll treat the younger patients rather than the older patients because the younger patients have a higher survival rate, and so it's getting very serious in these rural areas because they really aren't set up to have big surges in cases. But they're starting to pick up in the places that they were previously. So, Pennsylvania is a good example that it's first it got up to 1,000 cases a day. Now it's up to 2,000 cases a day. And it really hasn't been a 2,000 cases a day since the spring. So it had gone down and now it's going up in Pennsylvania, but it's doing the same thing. It got up to 2,000 in New York. It broke 1,000 in New Jersey. It broke 1,000 in Massachusetts. All of these areas had been low. They hit in the spring and then they got under control and they were all well below 1,000 cases a day. They were in fact down into 200-300 cases a day. New York was maybe 500, and now they're above 1,000 and actually getting close to 2,000. There's Midwestern states like Indiana and Ohio, and those states are now getting up to a couple thousand a day, and so Friday, it set an all-time high. It broke 80,000 on Friday. And to do that, it didn't have any states that had, 10, 15,000 like it did in the South. They were getting up to 10,000 a day pretty regularly in Texas and Florida and California when things were getting up to around 60,000, but now they're closer to 5,000, but there's a lot of states that are in the 1,000 to 5,000 range. And we add them all together, it got up to 80,000 on Friday. And then on Saturday, kind of surprisingly, it got up to 80,000 again. And on Saturday, there's about five states that actually don't report any cases on the weekend. And so they all are registering zero. And in spite of, zero in five of the states, they still got up to 80,000. And then it dropped down yesterday, which it traditionally does on the weekend because it's kind of sure. Sunday where right. There aren't that many people there and they're reporting Saturday's data. But it was still 55,000 yesterday and today. it is not quite complete. It looks like it's going to get close to 70,000. It's about 64,000, but California is not done yet. And so it's going to be 65,000 to 70,000 today. And Mondays are usually low because they're really reporting Sunday data. So tomorrow it'll get back to kind of what the weekly numbers are. And it usually increases through the week. So, Tuesday's the lowest of the 4 days that they have a regular amount, and usually Friday's the highest. And so it's very likely that by Friday, it'll probably get in the 90,000, setting another all-time high as far as cases are concerned. And, you know, everybody's pretty much assuming that in the next few weeks, it'll be getting up to 100,000. And it's hard to say how high it's going to go from there, but it's pretty easy to say that it'll be an all-time high. And that's what's happening in Europe. Europe is having an explosion in cases. The stock market was down today because they're realizing that this is kind of a, for Europe, it's a clear-cut second wave, because for Europe, after the initial cases in the spring, they pretty much went down to very low levels over the summer. They got things under control, but they're still kind of bouncing back up. In sure. Some countries, they still have it under control. China pretty much has it under control. They have one case and they do, you know, test several million people. They kind of flood the area and identify all the contacts and quarantine the contacts. And so they're still able to keep a lid on things by doing extensive testing and quarantine. You kind of got away from them in Europe, so Europe is taking off. And everybody's assuming that the U.S. will be worse than any other country, because they're starting at such a high level that the numbers never really got down to about 40,000, then went up to 60, and then is still above 40,000 when things are taking off, and now it's up to 80, but it's very early. And this is in part because things have eased. Students went back to school. A lot of these outbreaks are college towns that are starting out at the university, that are spreading to the local community. And they have other things that are going on. They're easing up restrictions for football games. The Big Ten started up again, I think, this weekend. And, you know, these football games are not going to last. That there's just way too much virus on the college campuses. And then to have contact sports, it's going to spread in the football teams. But the bottom line is that the numbers are going up and the holiday season's coming up. So Thanksgiving is coming up, and, you know, they're warning that maybe it's not a good idea to have a big family gathering on Thanksgiving. And most people are going to just say, well, I don't know if it's that bad. And they're going to go and have their big holiday get-togethers. And then that's going to spread the virus in those localized groups. And then they're going to travel, get infected, and then go back home and spread the virus around. And so it's going to get cooler. The virus does better when it's cool and dry.
No, it's starting to cool
off. Virus is going to...
Snow's coming down the Midwest.
Right.
Rockies, right. Midwest, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of rain coming up with the new hurricane Zeta, I guess, and that's going to be a wet event up here in Pennsylvania. I think they're expecting a couple inches, which is a lot for Pennsylvania. And so it's going to be, you know, it's going to be rainy and it's going to be cool. You know, it's not going to be 70, 80 degrees. It's going to be, you know, 50 degrees. It's been getting down into the 30s at night. And so people are going to do less outside, more inside, and then it's just going to continue getting cooler. And so it's going to have a seasonal effect. And so that's kind of what the numbers are looking like. And it'll be pretty well confirmed this week, because I would virtually guarantee that the numbers will hit an all-time high by the end of this week. And it'll probably get even higher, next week. And these areas in, you know, North and South Dakota, or in these other sparsely populated areas, are gonna be in the news because all their ICUs are already full, and things are just getting to go. You know, like you said, there's snow up in you know, the upper Midwest, and I think there was some snow
coming
even
down
in the
into northern western Texas tomorrow, as one of our correspondents told us.
Right. So basically, and I think they've got a major outbreaks like in El Paso, Texas. And so, mm-hmm. you know, there's, I think along the border, they've got a lot of cases. And so, there's going to be a lot of activity, and it's going to run up. You know, the numbers are going to go higher, and that's actually going to, that's going to affect the election. I mean, Trump was on 60 Minutes on Sunday, and, you know, it went very badly, as anticipated. And, he got up and cut it short and walked off. He couldn't handle the questions about the pandemic. Then he couldn't answer it. I mean, he did the same stories that, you know, I don't know who believes him now. I think most of the people that are kind of looking at this and say, what's going on here, kind of knows when he kind of says that it's under control, and we're turning the corner, and the only reason that there's a lot of cases is because of testing. And it's just nonsense that most of the country knows this nonsense now. They see that the numbers are at all-time highs, and as they're going to all-time highs, he's talking about turning the corner, which, you know, if you're constantly saying you're turning the corner, you're either running in place or you're running in circles. Because nothing's changed. He's been saying turning the corner for about a month now. And
that's a long corner.
And
I get it.
And it's just a big circle. So he's not going anywhere. He's not making any progress. And then if there was any doubt that the pandemic is going to, you know, raise some serious issues on Trump's ability to govern or manage the pandemic. Pence has got his own outbreak now. He's got five staff members, including his
press secretary, right?
chief of staff, as well as his body man, and so. So the chief of staff, he sees all the time, the body man, that his job is to basically be with the vice president all day long, you know, hand him papers and bring him stuff.
Would it surprise you if Pence already had it and just wasn't symptomatic and just went through it?
Well, he may have been symptomatic when there was the vice president debate. That he at least one of his eyes was bloodshot, and that is one of the symptoms of a viral infection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so he had that. Some thought he seemed kind of, you know, worn out, lethargic during the debate. And so there's been speculation that, you know, he might have had it then, you know, that he infected all of his staff as opposed to the other way around. I don't know. He's, you know, according to guidelines, he's supposed to be quarantined. I mean, he's been a close contact of multiple people that are confirmed, and he's claiming he's essential personnel, and therefore he can go to his rallies. And essential personnel are usually first responders or are people that are involved with the food supply, that they're right. Basically got kind of a waiver because they're in critical positions, and most don't think that going to rallies would qualify as critical personnel. And it's not surprising it's spread. I mean, their mask usage is fairly minimal. I mean, I put it on somewhat when they're out in the public, but it sounds like most of their office meetings are without masks, and there's plenty of room for infections. And this is another example where, in spite of whatever their testing procedures, I mean, Trump always says that his staff is tested almost daily, although that seems to be off because he couldn't say when he was last negative before the debate and before the Rose Garden issues. And so I don't know how often Pence or his staff get tested, but the fact that, they've got five and counting, they've all been announced, but they apparently all tested positive within the last several days. There also seems that there was a delay in releasing it, and Mark Meadows didn't want to make it public that they were all infected, and then it eventually leaked out, and then they ended up acknowledging it. So that if they had their way, they wouldn't have mentioned it at all. And it was the same thing with the president, that he originally didn't want to notify anybody about Hope Hicks, and then it started getting too many people were positive, and she was quarantined on the way back from the Minneapolis meeting rally.
We don't know if she was first or Trump was first. They made it sound like Hope Hicks was first, but we really don't know. Trump could have been infected.
No, Trump was almost definitely first because he wouldn't say when he was when he last was negative. I mean, he would have said he was negative if he really was. I mean, he may very well have been positive for the debate because he.
Well, it was a non-response,
arrived,
which means whoops.
Right. Well, all the circumstances. I mean, he arrived late for the debate. He didn't get tested. I mean, Cleveland Clinic was basically testing everybody to ensure that everybody was negative. And because he was late, he said, he gets tested all the time, and he's good. So he never really got tested by Cleveland Clinic. And then when he was asked, when were you last tested negative, he wouldn't answer. And so that would indicate that at best, he wasn't tested. And at worst, he was tested and he was positive. But he didn't tell anybody because that would have looked bad, that he couldn't do the debate. He was infectious.
We got another angle here that's interesting. AstraZeneca, I assumed, was pretty well out of the game. They had two myelitis, transverse myelitis, and then they had a fatality.
Right.
But they're back. According to the stories I have here, it says AstraZeneca says its COVID-19 vaccine produces robust immune response in elderly patients. That's a headline story there. Here's another one for all of you out there who may not have seen this. This is AstraZeneca. British Health Minister dashes hopes that the AstraZeneca vaccine could be ready before Christmas. Well, that's pretty sure. Damn stupid. Come on. That's it. You just had a fatality. You had two people with serious side effects. But they're still at it. They're saying now we got a great, robust immune response.
They let them... well, I mean, those are two different things. One's actually, you know, releasing data that they've already gathered. And the other has to do with, you know, after there was a halt when they resumed. But they had already resumed. I had mentioned that last week, that they gotten the go-ahead to,
here's another
to
angle.
Start up again.
UK, the health minister in the UK says, dispels rumor hospital trust staff, they have a trust staff at the hospital, is to receive AstraZeneca's coronavirus vaccine very soon. So it seems like Astra is working in the UK now, more than he, at least publicly,
in the UK. Right, right. Well, that's what happened. When they had the halt, they ended up restarting it everywhere except for the U.S. So the U.S. halt was longer, and then this last week they started up again in the U.S. They had started up in the other countries after just a few days' halt. So the halt was shorter for the other countries. The U.S. wanted more data, and so it took them a little bit longer. But you know, essentially what that does is it's not so much that they're not going to get on the market because of a delay in approval. They're just not going to get on the market because of a delay period. So they have to reach a certain number of outcomes. I mean, the way those trials are set up is they vaccinate a large number of people. And then they need to have a certain number of cases so they have enough data so they can see whether there's a difference. And initially, they're blind. So they have to get X number of people that either got the vaccine or the placebo to actually develop symptoms and be confirmed to be positive. And then when they get enough people that are positive, then they can break the code and see how many of those people that were positive got the vaccine and how many got the placebo. And, you know, if it turns out that all the positives are in the placebo and they're not showing up in the vaccine, then that's the evidence for efficacy. And then they can put the data together and submit it and then get approval if they meet certain minimums as to how many people they've got an outcome on and how many, you know, how the two groups compare. But what you have to remember is that the vaccines that are most furthest along require two injections, you know, a shot and a booster.
Sputnik V is two injections. I don't know much about it. The Russian vax.
Sputnik V, they seem to be slow in getting a whole lot of people enrolled. So their numbers are still pretty low. I mean, when they announced that it was successful, I think they only had like 100 people. And then they were going to get their numbers up in a phase three, but it sounded like they just had like a few thousand people, where some of the other trials are talking about enrolling between 30,000 and 60,000 people. And so Sputnik seems to be a little bit slow on the enrollment, and then they asked Putin whether he would take the vaccine, and he said he wasn't sure. So he wouldn't commit to taking it. he wouldn't commit to taking it. So that's not going to, you know, speed
things along. Well, his daughter allegedly
there.
Did take it.
Right, remember? Right. Yeah, you know, she's younger. I mean, that's what the issue is. What the issue is that the younger people will generally do relatively well, even if they get infected. And and the older people are the ones that are in most need of the vaccine. And so the younger people are thinking, well, we'll go ahead and take it. I mean, the worst that's going to happen is, you know, it won't be that bad in general. And then if they have the vaccine and it doesn't work, but they get infected, you know, they'll have a pretty good immune system and be able to handle it anyway. Mm-hmm. And so the younger people are typically who gets the vaccine first, and that's part of the reason AstraZeneca is saying, well, they're getting good response in older people now. And because they didn't initially infect that many older people. So their initial data that they were saying it looks good and they can go to phase three was really because most of those that were enrolled and got the initial results were people that were younger and in good health. But okay. The vaccines that are furthest along require two injections. And so if you go through the numbers, you know, if they get approved the beginning of December, which is probably, you know, one of the earliest dates, that means that the people that get the vaccine get their first shot at the beginning of December. They don't get the second shot until the beginning of January, and then it's going to take 2 to 3 weeks for it to become fully effective after the second injection. So, even if they start, you know, December 1st, they're really not going to have immunity until the end of January, beginning of February. And unfortunately, you know, most of the activity is probably going to be in, December and January. By February, things might start easing up a little bit already. So by the time the vaccine is taking effect for the earliest people that get it, it's kind of over the hump as far as when the...
I see.
The most
right.
activity.
Well,
we
have, though, is influenza season now. Now, here's a story that I'm hoping to learn what you know. Because I don't know too much about it. I've got the headlines. I've got the stories. I don't know which product is being used. But the Australians now have announced that they're, 48 dead from the flu vaccine in South Korea, I guess. And that's a shock. What did they change in the vaccine to cause such a reaction or change the profile?
Well, I don't know. That's a good question. The number of deaths is dramatic increased above what they normally would get. I think the numbers were that they would normally get, a dozen or two dozen deaths over like a 10-year period, you know, not per season. That's like in a 10-year period. So they normally get a couple of deaths a year. And this is, you know, giving 40 deaths in a month or something like that. And so something is definitely amiss. And the report I didn't really have a good explanation. They said they, you know, didn't seem to be a single batch. It didn't even seem to be a single company. And it's a little confusing as to why that would happen. Unless it has something to do with COVID and that, you know, that somehow the flu vaccine has some ability to enhance the ability of COVID and these people are getting a shot and then they're having adverse effects, but it's really from a COVID infection as opposed to a response to the vaccine. So, it was a little bit concerning because they were saying, well, you know, we really can't afford not to continue. You know, we can't really stop giving flu vaccines at the middle of the beginning of the flu season. And especially with COVID, you know, that they want to get people vaccinated so that they're not, you know, overrunning the hospital. And And so it's kind of like they've got this issue. They really don't know what it's from. It is definitely an issue. I mean, it's enough deaths. There's something wrong somewhere.
How many manufacturers of mainline influenza vaccines, the quad, are there? It's just something that multiple companies are...
Okay. There's like three or four that are going to give the kill vaccine, and then they've been going back and forth on the live vaccine, so that would be another one or two companies, and then they've got a couple companies that don't use eggs. One of the companies grows it in mammalian cells. The other one does it in a recombinant vaccine. So they're basically, you know, just growing it.
It wasn't Australia. Protein. I misspoke. It was Singapore.
No, it would be Singapore. Somewhere in Asia. Right.
Singapore temporarily halted use of two manufacturers. This is what I was after. I was trying to find out. Yeah.
That's what I was saying, that it wasn't a given batch, or it wasn't even a given manufacturer. And that's why, to me, it sounds like it's something else. You know, that the vaccine in association with something else is causing the deaths. And that's why it doesn't have to be a bad batch of vaccine. It just has to be the vaccine plus something. And what the something is isn't clear. But that number of deaths is unusually high. And it didn't sound like they had any idea. It didn't sound like they had any idea what was causing the deaths, but there was something that was
Have deaths here, it's going to set off a major panic, no question. In terms of influenza vaccine.
Right.
The two companies that are named are, this is one word, Sky Cell Flu, and then the second word is quadrivalent, and then there's VaxiGrip Tetra, VaxiGrip Tetra. VaxiGrip Tetra and Sky Cell Flu Quadrivalent. Those are the two makers, or the two brand names.
Yeah, so I mean, neither of those are ringing bells for here. So I'm not sure, you know, what.
Right.
How big their distribution is, and whether that's a local two companies, and whether there's something that they have in common. Because it's weird, because it is flu season. So throughout the Northern Hemisphere, you know, people are getting.
I got more for you. Here's more for you. Sky Cell Flu Quadrivalent is manufactured by South Korea's SK Bioscience and locally distributed by AJ Biologics, while VaxiGrip Tetra is manufactured by Sanofi and locally distributed by Sanofi Aventis. This is sent in Singapore.
Yeah.
So you got South Korea's SK Bioscience and Sanofi are the two manufacturers in these two vaccine lines that are now being suspended in Singapore.
I mean, to me, it sounds like it's something going on in Singapore. You know,
but they did have some deaths
because
in South
Korea. Because you got two different manufacturers, and essentially... usually everybody uses kind of the same target. And so the quadrivalent vaccine, is going to be the same throughout the Northern Hemisphere. So everybody's using the same target viruses, and there's some differences on how they grow the virus. But, and the fact that you've got two different manufacturers and the problems in one location makes me think there's something going on at that location. Because like I said, that everybody's vaccinating, you know, at about the same time for the flu season. So, you know, I got my shot a couple a week or two ago. And a lot of people have got their shots. I mean, I had trouble actually finding the one that was grown in cell lines. And I don't know, you know, what the issue was, but I was surprised that it was as hard to find as it was. And apparently they were out of it, because where I ended up getting it was is Rite Aid, and the Rite Aid closer didn't have it, and so it wasn't like they didn't get it in. It sounds like they ran out of it in certain locations.
Well, did you try McDonald's?
No, I got it. I mean, I got it at Rite Aid.
I'm joking.
But it was
McDonald's doesn't
the river.
Have them yet.
I know, but the point is that the vaccines are out there, and you know, nobody else seems to be reporting deaths, and the fact that you've got deaths in one location and it's involving two different vaccines make you think there's something going on regionally, and it's a combination of whatever's going on regionally with the vaccine that's causing the problem. But but that doesn't mean it couldn't spread, and it doesn't mean that they're going to get an answer anytime soon. So it's a bad situation, because they say they're afraid to stop the vaccinations, and they don't really know what's causing it. And so I don't know. If the numbers keep on going up, my guess is they will halt the vaccinations there, and they'll probably eventually figure out, you know, what the problem is. But that is concerning that there's that many deaths, and they apparently don't know what the problem is, and they're reluctant to stop the vaccinations. But back to the to the pandemic here, you know, Mark Meadows came out yesterday and said that they couldn't control the pandemic. And, you know, to make that statement a week before the election, when they're already under criticism for having all these rallies and you know, having most of the people at the rally without masks and with already a trail of infections following the rallies, to come out and say, well, we can't control the pandemic, is kind of admitting that, you know, they're heading towards this herd immunity, which is, you know, no real scientist is you know, advocating, you know, using herd immunity for a virus that they don't, you know, it looks like for the most part, the immunity might only last for a matter of 4 months or so. So you're not going to usually kill a couple million people to find out that the immunity you got isn't working anymore anyway. So you just have a lot of dead bodies and not a whole lot of herd immunity.
What's a normal immunological profile for someone who has been infected with a coronavirus or any virus? What's a long term?
The point is, it's not any virus. That if you take something like the MMR, that generally you go and you get that vaccination as a child, have lifetime immunity. Right. And that's it. So you get vaccinated, and that maybe you need a booster. I mean, they've got the shingles for, you know, adults. So you get it as a child, and then you're 50, 60 years old, and they go ahead and get a booster. So it lasts almost a lifetime. And that's in marked contrast to something like the flu. You know, the people get a flu shot every year, and sometimes they worry that if you get it too early in the season, it may not last all the way through till the end of the season. So the flu shot's only going to give you immunity for a matter of months, you know, like 3-4 months or so. And that's been the history of the flu, and that's also been the history of coronaviruses, that immunity doesn't really last that long. The virus changes enough. And so that's why, even though there's a vaccine for flu, and it's used fairly widespread in the U.S., is, you know, I think it's in the ballpark of 100 million people get vaccinated each year. So that's a third of the population. And the virus comes back every year. I mean, it doesn't eliminate the virus. And you know, the idea is that in many instances, people will have a milder disease if they have the vaccine. It won't necessarily prevent them from getting the flu, but it, you know, in some cases, will make you for a milder case. And so there's no evidence other than, you know, well, it's not evidence. The only person that's saying that it might be lifetime immunity is Trump. I mean, he says, oh, I got immunity. It might last 4 months and it might last a lifetime. But nobody is saying it'll last a lifetime except for him. And there's no evidence of it lasting a lifetime. So in the case of a coronavirus,
we have no way to know.
There's flu viruses, cold viruses.
Yes.
So it's not a brand new virus. It's a novel virus, and this particular version is new. But
there
are multiple coronaviruses, and none of them give you lasting immunity. They're all a matter of months or a year.
Right.
So
how common?
What's the question?
Among cold coronaviruses are polybasic cleavage sites.
Oh, they aren't. They aren't common at all. The polybasic cleavage sites are found in, like, Newcastle disease, are found in avian influenza, the animal version more than the human version. Those are what they call high path and low path. So in the high path, they have polybasic cleavage site. In the low path, they have a single basic. As far as coronaviruses, this is the only one that is been identified to date.
It's the only one so far. Interesting.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. And that's the reason it's a pandemic and not an epidemic. I mean, that's the basic issue that Trump still hasn't figured out. That if you have an epidemic, that means it's localized. And if it's localized, that means that the virus really doesn't have the capacity to kind of spread worldwide. That there's a limitation that it can kind of cause an outbreak. But it hasn't adapted enough, or it doesn't have a high enough R-naught or whatever to really escape from a local region. And epidemics do go away. So if he wants to say, you know, it magically disappears or it goes away when it gets warmer, that's what happens with epidemics. But that's not what happens with pandemics. Pandemics don't go away. I mean, there's been 4 pandemics in the last 100 years. They've all been flu, and none of them went away. They were replaced. I mean, they had H1N1 in 1918, and then the virus evolved enough so that people kind of turned into a seasonal flu, but it was still H1N1. So H1N1 didn't go away until 1957, when there was another pandemic, and it got replaced by H2N2. So it was still flu, and it was still around, and the only reason H1N1 went away is because it got displaced by H2N2. And then in 1968, the H2 got replaced by H3. It kept the N2, so it became H3N2. And then H1N1 probably came out of some freezer or something and got reintroduced in 1971. And ever since then, there have been two flus that have been circulating, both H1N1 and H3N2. And the H1N1 seasonal got replaced in 2009 by the swine H1N1. So it was a little bit different, but it was still H1N1. And so there's always been flu. And when it changes serotypes, it kind of starts out as a pandemic, and it's a new virus, and people don't do that well, and then they kind of adapt to it. But it doesn't suddenly disappear. It's a pandemic. It transmits easily. It's worldwide, and it doesn't go away. And so he thinks that SARS is going to go away. And he keeps on saying it's going to go away, and there's no reason to think it's going to go away. It doesn't go away.
Well, just ask the people in Iran. You know what's going on in Iran now? And we don't hear much about it. One death every 5 minutes. They're saying the country's death rate could double in just the next 2 weeks. They're recording one death every 5 minutes in Iran. And for those of you out there who think that 5G is somehow rocked.
How many deaths do you think they have in the United States? I mean,
I'm just pointing out another side of the coin here, way on the other side. But people are saying that 5G is triggering some kind of intensification but it's not. Iran has 5G, but they hadn't turned their system on when they were first hit with coronavirus. That's what people don't understand.
5G has nothing to do with
anything. Of course. It's not necessary.
There's no mechanism for it. The virus has been around for a long time. And, and 5G hasn't. And
that's why I pointed out, and just to help people understand,
Iran, the timing isn't even right.
It wasn't on in Iran. It was nothing to do with it, so just give that up. All right. Very good. Thank you, Henry. I appreciate it. Did you vote yet?
I voted by mail a long time ago. Although there's issues with that, we can talk about that later. But I mean, on the ballot, they say that it has to be received by the third, and then as long as it's got to be postmarked by the third, and then received within 3 days. Uh-huh. And now the Supreme Court's going to say, well, it doesn't matter that if it's not received by Election Day, it doesn't count. So if you follow the instructions on the envelope, your ballot may not count anyway. So because of the post office and the Supreme Court, which is the Pennsylvania Supreme Court said that there was nothing wrong, that as long as it's received within 3 days, if it's postmarked by the third and received within 3 days, it counts. And then the Supreme Court was 4-4, so it holds it up. But now there's a new now there are 9 members, and they're going to resubmit it. So they've already got an answer on it, and now they're going to resubmit it with less than a week to go. And you follow the directions, and in spite of that, they're not going to count it if it isn't received. And there are delays in Philadelphia and Detroit, coincidentally. So the battleground states have mail deliveries delayed, and the Supreme Court is saying we're not going to count them.
It's going to be a crazy time. Good. Yeah. Okay, thanks very much for being here again, Henry. All right, talk to you soon.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Good night. Okay, that's our crazy wild Monday. Nothing more on Jordan Maxwell. He is in the hospital, at least for the night, and we hope he'll be fine. And just a lot going on. Talk to you tomorrow night. Take good care.